top Fox News headquarters in New York City. Always seeking solutions, never sowing division. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the latest moments of the Brian Kilmeade Show. Alan West in 15 minutes, bottom of the hour. Senator Roger Marshall on a huge push that he's putting together that you're going to need to hear about. And we'll take your calls, 1-866-408-7669. It was great to be in New Hampshire. Glad to be back now. And there's nothing older. It's almost like the Super Bowl. The day after the Super Bowl, there's nothing older than the Super Bowl. You just want to pick up and go. You do some aftermath, but then you don't talk about the Super Bowl. You're just done with it. Same thing with New Hampshire. Everyone's saying 5 weeks from now, South Carolina, will this whole complexion of this thing change? And then, of course, we're covering everything happening. We just got good GDP numbers, 3.3 GDP growth, which is higher than thought. Let's see if that factors into Joe Biden's message. So let's get to the big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's big three.
Number three.
It's called Bidenomics. If you notice, all the major economists who are talking about there's going to be a recession next week, next month, but all of a sudden, they're seeing the Lord.
What's he talking about? Still running on Bidenomics. Are the numbers coming his way? Perhaps. As Joe Biden takes aim at Trump, ignoring Haley.
Number two.
I think at this point right now, the Senate and Congress have to deliver on a comprehensive border security situation. We should, absolutely. And I don't understand why it would be controversial.
Well, because nobody trusts that this president wants to do anything about it. Border battle heating up on every level. Texas ramps up its states' rights on the border security. Biden's court fights and the finishing touches are being made on a massive border bill, as both sides have problems with it so far, but they really know nothing about the bill.
Number one.
We've only had two states that have voted. We got 48 more that deserve to vote. So we are not going to sit there and just give up.
She's still fighting, but not winning. Nikki Haley continues the battle for GOP nomination and has licensed and went after Donald Trump big time, who's back in a New York courtroom. Why both should embrace this fight on some levels. And that's what I really think. Look, if Trump wants to speak nationally about Joe Biden, do it. At the same time, Ambassador Nikki Haley wants to keep running, she should do it if she wants. If I'm the president of the United States, the former president, I'm not even bringing it up. Yeah, she could stay in. You know, it's a tough decision. She could decide what goes on. The numbers are pretty overwhelming. Delegates, it's not that bad, 32-17. But when you look at Super Tuesday, there's not one state she's predicted to win. Nevada, she's not even in it. And in South Carolina, we haven't seen a recent poll, but she's trailing by about 40 points. But what I was most surprised about was not that Nikki Haley was still in it, but her tone is so directly at President Trump and personal. Because she's not 60. She's in her 50s. She's definitely going to be around in 2028. But I know she does not have to go against President Trump again. But she has to win over President Trump's voters. And he'll have influence. After 4 years, if he says, whatever you do, don't go for Haley, you're not going to go for Haley. Ask Mitch McConnell. Mitch McConnell came out yesterday and said Donald Trump will be our nominee. And he said that he doesn't want this border bill done. It will link to aid, and I don't think we should do it. So Mitch McConnell is noticing the power of Trump that he still retains. Listen to Nikki Haley. Cut three.
And so we were very excited last night because we saw that we had gone up 25 points in a month. And we were thrilled. So we got out there and we did our thing and we said what we had to say. And then Donald Trump got out there and just threw a temper tantrum. He pitched a fit. He was insulting. He was doing what he does. But I know that's what he does when he's insecure. I know that's what he does when he is threatened. And he should feel threatened, without a doubt.
So does that sound like somebody thinking about her political future? I just think that all of her donors that are with her can't be disappointed about her performance. You know, we've heard some things about maybe run some John McCain-like town halls where you're taking question after question after question instead of brief diner stop-bys, easily adjustable. But it doesn't sound like somebody that wants to bow out and think about tomorrow and That is a strategy which is not in her best interest because she's making it personal about the most popular Republican in the country. Cut five.
This is a choice between more of the same or going forward. More of the same is not just Joe Biden. More of the same is Joe Biden and Donald Trump. 70% of Americans have said they don't want another Donald Trump, Joe Biden rematch.
Okay. I'm pretty sure the die has been cast. The only thing that would change it is if a new poll comes out in South Carolina in single digits, because that would mean the people of South Carolina don't care what their governor thinks, don't care about the endorsements of their two senators, don't care about the endorsements of 10 congressmen and women from Nancy Mace on down. The only person with Nikki Haley right now, who I'm not anti-Nikki Haley. I don't care what she says, but I'm not anti-Nikki Haley at all. In fact, on foreign policy, I agree with her. So the right now is Ralph Norman. And he's not necessarily anti-Trump. He's just pro-Haley. So I'm just wondering what exactly is going on and why Nikki Haley has not pivoted to, I'm a better choice. I'm younger. I understand the policies. I got the domestic and international experience. But I am somebody that clearly understands the vision and what Trump did, and I can improve on it, as opposed to personally go after him, telling him to take a mental, he wants a mental competency exam. Man, he is not going to forget that. I don't know if you heard. So one of her big donors, this guy, Andy Sabine, he's out. Cut seven.
You got to know when to hold them. You got to know when to fold them. It's time for her to fold them. She has absolutely no chance. And to go into South Carolina when you're 31 points down and you've got two senators and a governor supporting Trump, why humiliate yourself and ruin your political career? She's better off taking that money. I'll be the first one to write her a check in 28. And if for some unforeseen reason Trump implodes over the next 6 months for something none of us expect, she has the money to jump back in.
Right. They're suspending their campaigns for a reason. They could just ramp it up again. Everyone reports back again. And Trump is even the Trump team would be looking for jobs. But right now, that is a well-oiled machine. But I don't think Trump did himself any favors throwing a fit and going after Nikki Haley. So in terms of overall, what could you say about what we now know about New Hampshire? And I'll just what we now know two races in. We know is Donald Trump won the men. He won the women. He won the Republicans with 75% of the vote. 40% of unaffiliated were assumed to be going to Haley. She gradually got tougher, gradually got stronger from the time she declared a year ago she was first in, got a lot of publicity. But now she's selling mentally challenged, kissed up to dictators, can't handle a full day. Interesting. So she's going to head to South Carolina. We'll see. They brought up age and temperament. We'll see if both those go. So just real quick before we move on, Mark Penn on the analysis on the work that Trump still has to do. And the worry that people like Ron DeSantis are talking about now is Donald Trump can secure the nomination. But is it going to be worth anything? Are there so many anti-Trumpers out there that he can't win the general? There's too many, and my answer to Ron DeSantis is too many polls that show he's now winning in battleground states. He's got a higher approval rating, and he's winning overall in the real clear average. That means over the course of the last 3 months. Here's Mark Penn, cut 11.
Look, when I look at these numbers, he has consolidated his opponents except one, Nikki Haley. He's on the way to winning this nomination, but she is holding the critical swing vote in the election. If he doesn't reconcile with her, it will be a fission that Democrats will be able to exploit in the election with their key issues on abortion, on climate change, and in those suburbs. So he's still got a big job ahead of him. It's not over yet.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see. And hopefully that when they pour over the stats and they look at the numbers, they're not going to spin it to themselves, even though they want to spin it to the press. They'll understand where his weaknesses are and see how to change it. So I thought that was good for New Hampshire. Donald Trump will get a C. You know, why didn't you know in the exit polls? Why didn't you vote for Trump? What is the problem? What do you mean? Why don't you want to vote for Trump? Was it just that Haley was better? or that you just don't like Trump at this point. So, and what is correctable? What do you want to hear? Are you persuadable? And you get those stats and you work on it. You could change it. The border crisis is here. Greg Abbott is now using the supreme law of the land to give Texas soldiers power, their Army Rangers, the Texas Rangers, as well as the National Guard, soldiers power over Biden, over the federal government, and declare the state as the right to self-defense from the migrant invasion. Now, they're having a huge thing with the White House. Supreme Court says they have to take up the razor wire and the Border Patrol can cut it. They put the razor wire to keep the illegal immigrants out. The president of the United States wants everyone to be convinced that he sincerely wants a better border deal. At the same time, suing Texas for putting razor wire down or building a wall. So if you color your opponents skeptical on your sincerity, this is the reason why. You don't fight Texas on protecting their own border if you actually want to pass a bill that protects his or her own border. Backing up Greg Abbott in the fight against the federal government, Ron DeSantis, Glenn Youngkin, Kristi Noem, Brian Kemp, Greg Gianforte over in Montana, Kevin Steet, all saying, Roger Williams, congressman from Texas, we are going to stand up to the federal government. I mean, this feels like a civil war. States against the government, states joining other states against Washington. Can you imagine if this was Donald Trump in the White House? They'd go, this guy is literally dividing the country. That's what this guy's doing. When we come back, I bring up this Texas story to Texas citizen Congressman Alan West. Don't move.
Challenging conventional thought and wisdom. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
I think at this point right now, the Senate and Congress have to deliver on a comprehensive border security situation. We should, absolutely. And I don't understand why it would be controversial to think that we should have a secured border, and we should be able to make sure that our immigration system works.
Yes, Senator Fetterman trying to sound reasonable, but no one trusts anyone on the Democratic side. Despite how hard Senator Lankford and maybe Senator Sinema is working, we haven't seen the plan yet. Lieutenant Colonel Alan West. Colonel, it's states against the federal government. Again, you guys lost the Supreme Court. You have to, now the federal government can go in and cut your razor wire. But Governor Abbott's not stopping now. How would you characterize what he's doing?
He is doing the right thing by the Constitution of the United States of America, and shame on the Supreme Court for getting it wrong. They're supposed to interpret the Constitution, and it's very clear what it says in the Guarantee Clause, Article 4, Section 4, that the federal government is supposed to guarantee every state protection from invasion. And if they do not do that, Article 1, Section 10, Clause 3 clearly states what the states, sovereign states, can do if actually invaded when there's imminent danger without any admit of delay. And so, in essence, what the Supreme Court said, Brian, to the state of Texas and to any state in the United States of America is that federal government can disregard, disavow their constitutional duty and responsibility, and a state has no recourse against the federal government. That's tyranny. And I think that's what the people down here in the state of Texas are not going to settle for.
So Greg Abbott came out and he invoked the founders. He says the federal government has broken the compact between the United States and the states. Yes. James Madison, Alexander Hamilton, other visionaries who wrote the Constitution foresaw that states would not be left to the mercy of a lawless president who does nothing to stop external threats like cartels smuggling millions of illegal immigrants across the border. And that's why he's taking action. So right now, we're looking at a situation where the Border Patrol is going to cut razor wire, and on the same and right behind it, you'll have the National Guard or the Texas Rangers laying out razor wire?
Yes, absolutely right, because this is an unlawful decision that came down. I'm very surprised that the Supreme Court didn't even put out an opinion on it to explain how they came up with this decision. So, again, the federal government is abdicating its constitutional duty. And if you go to the Declaration of Independence, it says the sovereign states are the ones that created the United States, the federal government, not the other way around. So everyone likes to invoke the Supremacy Clause, which is Article 6, Section 2 of the the Constitution, but there are three very important words in the Supremacy Clause, in pursuance thereof. When the federal government is taking actions in pursuance thereof to the rule of law and to the Constitution of the United States of America, yes, they're supreme over the other states. But in this case, no. Joe Biden is guilty of treason. He is abdicating his constitutional duty to abide and uphold the laws of this country. And I got to tell you, the Supreme Court, I don't know how they can look at themselves in the mirror, especially Justice Amy Coney Barrett and Chief Justice Roberts, and say they did the right thing on this decision.
I know. So the thing that, and we found out, Tom Homan told me that it was President Trump's original idea before Governor Abbott of shipping these illegal immigrants willingly to cities they want to go to. And now you see Chicago, Boston, New York overwhelmed. Here's Kata Truss. She is just a Chicago resident and a Democrat. Cut 19.
We would like to have our status as a sanctuary city removed. We would also like to see a better plan in place. I heard the mayor say in an earlier broadcast that he has no problem with the way that he has handled the migrant crisis. And I think that that's just not true. He has to have regrets because the people have regrets. We are not happy with what is happening here. We're certainly not happy with the billions of dollars that are millions of dollars, I should say, I'm sorry, that are being spent that could be used for our low income communities, our communities that have been divested in, and for our schools.
She's speaking for so many people who are Democrats.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she's absolutely right. And where do you see the biggest effect? You saw the school there in, I think it was Brooklyn or the Bronx, that was shut down so that they could bring in illegals. You know, how does that affect that family who all of a sudden has to look for child care? Who's going to teach and educate their child? You look at the problems with domestic security, the crime, the criminality, the amount of terrorists that are coming in, the fact that these illegals are coming in and taking jobs from Americans. And so these people in these inner city communities are really seeing themselves being displaced, and they're not happy about that. We just need to go back to the policies that were in place during the Trump administration. But again, Joe Biden purposefully, willfully, and intentionally is undermining the sovereignty of the United States of America. And sadly, Brian, the Supreme Court agreed with that.
Right. We'll see what happens. Lastly, do you agree with Nikki Haley's decision to fight on?
No, I don't. I mean, when you look at what happened in New Hampshire, that was the best case scenario for her because that's an open primary. And I'm sure she's trying to hang on for other states that have open primaries. We have an open primary here in Texas. But when you still have, what, 70 to 75% of non-Republicans voting for you, that's not how you win a Republican nomination. So I think that it's time for her to look and say, I'm not winning Republicans. And this is not about independents and Democrats who are not going to vote for you in the general election.
All right. Colonel Alan West, thanks so much. Busy time in Texas.
Always
Texas versus the world.
Yes, it is.
And I'm on Texas's side.
Texas.
Absolutely. Senator Roger Marshall coming up next. Don't move. Brian Kilmeade Show.
The more you listen, the more you'll know. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Building an economy from the middle out and the bottom up, not the top down. But because when we do that, the poor have a ladder up and the middle class does well. And the wealthy do well, although they should be paying a hell of a lot more taxes. We all do well. It's called Bidenomics. If you notice, all the major economists who are talking about there's going to be a recession next week, next month, but all of a sudden, they're seeing the Lord.
That is not true, although the GDP grew at 3.3% or 3.1, which is good, but no one's seeing Bidenomics. They're not feeling it. All the stats show it. The inflation rate is no longer rising at the rate it was, but it's still rising way above everything he's gotten or what he inherited. And no one's even used to any inflation for a whole generation. A lot of people not born in the 70s or an adult in the 70s wasn't cognizant of what everything costs and now experiencing it for the first time under Joe Biden. And his answer has been to spend and continue to say the wealthy got to pay more, which is a ridiculous line. But great if you're addressing a union. The craziest thing is today, I think it is at 2 o'clock Eastern time, he's going to go out and speak again in Wisconsin about Bidenomics, where it is not popular. All his friends and his allies, his former staffers, are saying lose Bidenomics. 6 in 10 Americans say they're holding their own financially, but nearly 3 in 10 feel they are falling behind. In Wisconsin, where he's going today, there's a margin of less than 1% in 2020. He won by less than 1% in 2020. It's a tipping point for the election, and this is what they care most about, is the economy. If he continues to go out and do what he did all summer, it hasn't moved the needle at all, Bidenomics. It's got a negative connotation now. They were expecting a growth of 2.8%, so at 3% it is better. But essentially what Trump is saying is game on. You want to brag about the economy? Brag about the economy. What he also got is an endorsement from the UAW. I don't know why it took so long. They always endorse a Democrat. I'm just not sure that Sean Fain understands that these men and women who are members of the union are not going to vote where he wants them to. Here is Cut 22.
UAW family, today I'm proud to stand up here with your International Executive Board and announce that the UAW is endorsing Joe Biden for President of the United States.
Right. Congratulations. And Joe Biden always answers by yelling because he thinks that people without, who are in unions like to be yelled at. Listen to this tone. Cut 21.
Since I took office, we've attracted billions of dollars in investment here in the United States. We supercharged advanced manufacturing, including electric vehicles made by union workers in America. China's determined to dominate that market with EV predominantly made in China and Chinese jobs. The previous administration was content to sit in the sidelines and let China take all these jobs. But I won't let that happen.
Really? That's what you say, won't let it happen? We don't have the rare earth here. They don't mine it. You don't push Minneapolis or Minnesota to allow us mining. You don't push Nevada to allow any mining. So what do? You pay other countries to do your mining, many of which they already beat us to the punch there. Anytime you talk about EVs, you're looking at a lack of control for us when it comes to the electric car, which are not popular right now. And electric cars are not popular also with unions. Number one, they build them outside union shops, number one. And number two, they don't need as many people to work on. Their batteries do just about all of it. It's solid state. So there's going to be a bit of controversy there. I have no idea why he's running on Bidenomics, but let's see if these numbers, people begin to feel these numbers and say, I really want Joe Biden to run my economy for the next 2 years. I don't really see that happening. Do you? I don't see it at all. But economically, he's got a few things going for him. He always talks about it. But the other thing to keep in mind, too, is that the electric car business that he's supporting is not loving him back. There is now a story that China is trying to supplant Tesla, which is an American company he does not like because they have X and they have other things. And he doesn't really think that he's doing a good job at all. So I don't think the president likes that at all economically. So we will see if that's a good move. I mean, are we in a situation now where Joe Biden's got so much power in his own unit that he'll come out and just defy everybody and just say, well, no, we're talking about the economy. I'm talking about Bidenomics, which he does not have to. You know why he doesn't have to? It was the Wall Street Journal that came up with it. By dropping it, it doesn't look like a defeat, does it? Here's the UAW president, who I'm not a fan of. Cut 22.
And here is what Joe Biden did during our stand-up strike. He heard the call, and he stood up, and he showed up. He joined us in solidarity on the picket line for the first time in our nation's history. A sitting president has ever done that.
Yeah, good luck. You vote for him. You vote for a president in the middle of contract negotiations with car companies. You decide you're going to take a side. Really? Do you realize how many jobs have been lost since then? Because the wages that they now got, the benefits that they have, which I'm sure they could, somebody else can talk more coherently about the details. But do you realize how many people they have to let go because of this? Do you realize how many warehouses, plants are going to have to be shut down because of the price of everybody that's getting paid? Money, perhaps, that doesn't fit with the budget that they have. So we'll see where that goes. I'm going to go back to that bipartisan deal that we're talking about with the that's going to be released, I think, over the weekend between Senator Lankford, Senator Sinema, and Senator Murphy of Connecticut. Now, it's there's a lot of rumors about it. I've been briefed on it roughly. And my main problem with it is not the details. It's who's implementing it. For example, they're going to change asylum laws. Okay. It's going to make it much harder to get in here. And you got to back up with proof the claims that you make verbally. And if you don't have it, you're expelled right away. They have no idea to do yet with unaccompanied minors. So that's still going to be a mess. And you can't hold people much longer than 30 days. So what are you going to do with these families? That stuff still got to be worked out. What they talked about, and I think it's been mischaracterized, is if you get times at the border where there's over 10,000. Remember, it's happened a few times over the last few months. What they want to do is do what they do with the stock market. When the stock market starts dropping after, I think, 2008, or it might have been in 88 or 93. I know we had these market crashes. They put a failsafe. So when everyone starts selling off, they just shut it down. Could be 12 at noon. Shut it down to the next day. What they're going to do is if they have a flood of illegal immigrants at 5,000, it looks like, then they shut it down. Now, people will say, well, letting 5,000 in a day. That's not really how it is. Not letting 5,000 in a day. They're changing parole. They don't talk about having Mexico enforce their southern border. But they are talking about taking the $680 million that is already put aside for fence money that he's not spending because he doesn't want to build a fence on pure political reasons. And they're saying you got to go put up the wall. You know, you want to call it a fence, you want to call it a barrier, whatever. You got to use it to put up a wall. He wants to use it to build more soft-sided facilities. Bill Malusian said this. The proposed expulsion authority wouldn't even be the mandated until until 5,000 people come across the border each day. That's a minimum baseline of 150,000 per month, or 1.8 million a year allowed to come across our mandated crackdown. The highest Trump ever had was 850,000. So it's not the reform they're looking for. They did talk about the danger yesterday. It was emphasized by this apprehension. Border Patrol agents in Texas arrested this guy from the Alina cartel. It's a foot guide with over 40 illegal entries into the past 2 years, constantly being let go. Now he's under arrest. Now, Bill Malusian put this tweet out. The cartel operative with over 40 illegal arrests is just the last two years. La Alina is the brutal enforcement wing for the Juarez cartel. Border Patrol can catch them, but if there's no prosecution or consequences in the courts, what is the point? 40-plus times is lunacy. Illegal entry is a federal felony with a two-year maximum sentence. What do you say we give that to them, if not more? You listen to the Brian Kilmeade Show. When we come back, I open up the phones, 1-866-408-7669, or you can go to BrianKilmeade.com, click on comments. I will get your words.
Learning something new every day on the Brian Kilmeade Show. If you're interested in it, Brian's talking about it. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Trump defeated Nikki Haley 54-43. It is the very first time he's ever been happy to see a woman in her 40s.
He won by 11 points. He beat Nikki Haley by double digits. He's also leading Nikki Haley by double digits in felony charges, 91-0.
Trump cruised to victory, and just like most cruises, half the people parted while the other half felt really sick. And
all right, there you go. The late night shows are starting, unimaginative, one-sided. There's so much comedy on the other side. Joe Biden just ate. We should try to pull this up, Eric. Joe Biden in a speech yesterday was speaking. He ate like four or five lines. He just blended them all into one. Totally indecipherable. You're going to tell me that talking about Trump is really that much, how it's so important you can't squeeze in any hit on Joe Biden that he is earning by going up in front of people and talking about 1864 and talking about this country being trying to take all the rights away from women? This guy's same Jim Crow 2.0. This guy is the most explosive language. And he's a guy that refused to go to New Hampshire. And if Trump just boycotted a state because it was too mixed race or too white or too black, can you imagine the comedy or the monologue would be all about that? I mean, Joe Biden lost 20 percentage points to Dean Phillips of Minnesota. You can't bring that up, sitting president?
Actually, you want to not talk about Biden, but Colbert talks about Phillips.
Yeah.
And it's you could, we have it. If you want to play it and then respond, it's okay. Mind-numbing.
Over on the Democratic side, Joe Biden won the New Hampshire primary despite not even being on the ballot. Woo! Feel the Joe-mentum. Get with the Joe-gram. He's the only option to prevent a Joe-talitarian take-jover. Biden beat the handful of candidates who were on the ballot, including Minnesota congressman and failed David Duchovny clone who escaped the lab. Dean Phillips. Phillips lost by 36 points, but he was gracious in his concession speech, kind of.
Congratulations to President Biden, who absolutely won tonight. But by no means in a way that a strong incumbent president should, but I respect him. He won.
Really? You're dissing the guy who just curb stomped you without being on the ballot? It's not a great look. It's like coming home with a black eye and saying, you should see the other guy. He's 81 years old, didn't show up, and still kicked my ass.
Yeah.
How disingenuous. All of the nonsense that Biden pulled about not being in New Hampshire, not being on the ballot, telling voters, like, it's they want to talk about how Biden's pushing for democracy, and then they're, like, rigging the Democratic side. They just don't mention it.
I mean, yeah, Dean Phillips would be a great guest for him. Dean Phillips is coming out and saying, I'm a Democrat. By the way, Dean Phillips told me, I don't know if it was on radio or not, but he said that he had Joe Biden to his house for a fundraiser.
No, he said that. It's posted on Instagram. It's great. Tell the story again.
So, yeah, so he had him on. He said that he had him on his house for a fundraiser, and all the rich people are inside, and they're all waiting for Joe, and they can't find him. They find him with the caterers in his garage eating ice cream, just talking to the everyday blue-collar person. He said it in a good way. I actually think it sounds like pretty insane. If someone's having a fundraiser for you, just disappear into the garage and eat ice cream. I mean, it sounds like he's a little nutty even back then. But he said, I have nothing against him, but he can't do the job anymore, and he's about to lose, and I don't want Donald Trump to be president again, and I wanted somebody else to run. He was going to finance him because it seems like he's a billionaire. He's had three huge successes in business, at least. And, he's got a situation where his dad got killed in Vietnam before, I think he was 6 months old at the time. His young mom ended up remarried 4 or 5 years later, but you can imagine that trauma and what he heard about that. And he's always politically active, always into politics. I don't know. I think he'd be a great guest. You really think it's going to be threatening to Joe Biden, a congressman from Minnesota who just wants to be on every ballot and speak coherently? He also said in his free time, he went over to the Trump rally and he just watched. Some people recognized him. They came up to him and they started talking to him. And he said, well, I go, what did you find? He goes, it's great people. So he's loving it. His family's loving it. I don't think he's going anywhere. I think he's going to stick around. And, you know, as Joe Biden waits for South Carolina, a state he will not get close to winning in the general, but that is diverse enough to be worth his time. And I just think that it's nutty that the people of New Hampshire aren't taking more pride in their own state and are allowing a whole party to blow them off and call them too white. And now, head-to-head, Donald Trump loses New Hampshire by about 2 or 3 points. He's got to find a way to get some of those Nikki Haley voters that didn't go for him, even though he won by about 11 points or maybe 12. In the end, there's some independents, moderates are undeclared, which could be Republicans. I don't know. Undeclared, according to the governor's Sununu, undeclared could be anything. They just don't want the ridicule or the praise or the tractors coming out, people judging them by the party they're in. So they just say, we go undeclared. So a lot of undeclared went with Nikki Haley. To me, I'm happy I won, and I go find out how Nikki Haley won them over because I want to need them because you're going to need New Hampshire could decide the election. I mean, you got Arizona, everybody knows. Georgia, everybody knows. Pennsylvania, Michigan, everybody knows. He's leading everywhere except Wisconsin in a battleground state. But I would try to find out what Nikki Haley was up to and see if he had an answer. I'm really curious to see next time Donald Trump speaks if he's going to speak right to Biden or is he going to go back and go after the person he calls bird brain. Senator Lindsey Graham. A friend of Haley's, but an ally of Trump's. Cut eight.
I can't express enough to the people watching your show that those of us in South Carolina who respect Nikki Haley believe that Donald Trump is the most capable person to be president, that can beat Joe Biden, but not just beat Joe Biden, clean up a broken border, scare the hell out of the terrorist, help Israel, who's under siege, make us energy independent again. Why do I say that? Because he did it before.
Right. And he's all in. And I think that people, I had Marco Rubio on, and he's all in. Some people say Marco Rubio would be a great VP, Hispanic, knows foreign policy, understands Congress, understands Trump. They seem to work well together after a horrible start. Remember, they went at each other personally. It's actually, the more you think of it, much more personal than Nikki Haley. But it's a little bit different now because he's an established president. So Lindsey Graham saying in South Carolina, you got it's a non-starter. I'm curious to see Ken Langone, because Ken Langone says, I want to support Nikki Haley, but I'm not gonna just throw my money into a hole that can't win. So Byron Donalds is somebody else supporting Donald Trump, thinks Nikki Haley's got to say goodbye. Cut 12.
Look, this thing is over. We know this. This is going to be Nikki Haley's biggest opportunity. She's 10 points down with 50% of the vote in. This is like when you start off on those roller coasters, Sean, and you start really low. That's where she started, 1%, 2%. You crest all the way up. You think things are going well, and then you go over the edge, and it's downhill from there. South Carolina's not going to go well for her. Nevada's not going to go well for her. Florida's not going to go well for her. It's time for the party to unite. This primary is over, but she wants to hang around, so we're going to have to beat her in a couple more states.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. It's going to be 5 long weeks. Where if she has some money, she'll probably do it. Man, it's going to get brutal if she has 5 weeks of calling Trump old using Democratic talking points. That's the problem. This is what Democrats are saying. You don't want to reinforce what Joe Biden's doing. Let Joe Biden do that, in my view. Because she is conservative. She does have a track record. She doesn't need to go personal, I don't think. Do you? Brian Kilmeade Show.
News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan. It's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
Hi everyone, Brian Kilmeade here. Thanks so much for listening. I come to you from 48th and 6th in Midtown Manhattan. Heard around the country, around the world, back from New Hampshire where the whole world was focused because those people around the country, around the world, aren't really looking forward to Trump too. Some are, like the Polish president. Some are, like the Hungarian president. I think Saudi Arabia would love to have President Trump back. Let me see. Who else? I'm running out of people. I think, the Mexican president, Obrador, but he'll be term limited out. I don't think the President Lula will have any love lost for him. The president of Argentina, perhaps. But that'll be about it. Bottom of the hour, Tudor Dixon will be with us. Remember, she was running off of the governor's seat. Now the governor is, Whitmer is somebody that, it's come out in a new book that was supposedly the choice of Joe Biden to be the vice president, but Barack Obama put his hand on the scale. So before we get to Michael Goodwin, let's get to the big three.
Now with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's big three.
Number three.
Called Bidenomics. If you notice, all the major economists were talking about there's going to be a recession next week, next month. But all of a sudden, they're seeing the Lord.
Yeah, well, they did have a good GDP number at 3.1%. Still running on Bidenomics. It's a problem. His own party says it's a problem. His former staffer says it's a problem. Guess who he's speaking today on Bidenomics in Wisconsin?
Number two.
I think at this point right now, the Senate and Congress have to deliver on a comprehensive border security situation. We should, absolutely. And I don't understand why it would be controversial.
Because no one believes that you're going to stick with the asylum rules. You stick with the lack of parole. Stick with everything except for giving people visas and not enforcing the border. Border battle heating up on every level. Texas ramps it up in states' rights on border security. Biden's court fights let everybody know that he wants it open. This guy's actually fighting in court to release razor wire that would help enforce the border. And you want him to believe he's for enforcing the border?
Number one. We've only had 2 states that have voted. We got 48 more that deserve to vote. So we are not going to sit there and just give up.
There you go. Still fighting, but not winning. Nikki Haley continues her battle for the GOP nomination and has gone all over Donald Trump. It's personal. Very interesting. As he goes back to a New York courtroom, does the 45th president, why both should embrace this fight, I really believe. Let's bring in Michael Goodwin, New York Post columnist, and has been writing about the election. Michael, first off, do you think that Nikki Haley's doing the right thing by continuing to fight on?
Good morning, Brian. Look, I think she is entitled to do this. You know, whether it's right, I think ultimately is going to depend on when the money runs out. Candidates don't stop running when they don't get votes. They stop running when there's no more money to buy plane tickets and hold rallies and do everything else. So she's apparently got enough money to continue. But, excuse me, if she doesn't win South Carolina, it's hard to see how she goes forward from there. I mean, it's her home state, and yet she trails in virtually every state on the calendar by 30 points or so. So I'm not sure she's entitled to run. She obviously has the money to run, but I'm not sure how she sees the race changing. I mean, I would like to know what event does she think is coming that would suddenly flip the tables on Donald Trump? I mean, you know, he's gotten majority in both states that we've had these contests so far. Does she think a conviction in one of these cases will make a difference? Because it seems to me none of the criminal cases are going to happen in the next month or so. There's not going to be any rulings. In fact, quite the opposite, perhaps, with Georgia, the mess there. He might get a big break out of the prosecutor's misconduct. So it's really hard to see in Nikki Haley what it is that she sees that tells her that this is still possible.
Right. One thing she's doing is not pulling back on the personal attacks on the president. I mean, if there's going to be an off ramp, it's, hey, I want to beat this guy and I think I'm the better candidate. I'm younger. I'm sharper. I think I got better a better vision. And here's why. But the things that would allow her to get back into the fold when she doesn't get the nomination, she's not saying. Cut four.
You know, it's interesting because a few days ago, he was going on and on about me. I mean, for a while. On and on about why I didn't send in security to the Capitol on January 6th. He said it over and over and over and over again. I mean, somebody's got to tell him I wasn't there on January 6th. I've never been at the Capitol working in a job like that, but I think he was a bit confused, and so we'll let that pass.
And then she went on to say that that's why I want mental competency tests for anyone over 75. So, listen, obviously the president drops the gloves and attacks people personally more than ever, but you could kind of do that with a front runner because they eventually got to come back to you if they want a role in the administration should you win. If she wants to ever win over MAGA voters and become president in 2028 or beyond, she's going to have to find a way to let them know she's not anti-Trump.
Yeah, I don't quite understand this argument that she's making there. I mean, I get it. It's kind of funny. And there's a zinger in it that, you know, he's getting like Joe Biden. But I'm not sure how that really advances your candidacy. I mean, as you say, Brian, you have to appeal. You have to pull away Trump supporters. I don't think that's the way of doing it. Now, I don't know what the way is. I mean, all the others thought they could do it, too. DeSantis, Christie, Ramaswamy, they all thought that the Trump support was, you know, rock solid at some level, maybe 25%, but beyond that was soft and could be pulled away. Well, in fact, what has happened, his support has doubled to now it's over 50% in every primary so far and in all the polls going forward. So I'm not sure what the theory is, and maybe she's just got some level of brilliance here, but attacking him on competency, kind of trying to get under his skin and make him erupt at her. What I read, what I hear from Trump supporters is they are locked with him, and this kind of side glancing sort of just trying to nick away at it, I don't think that's going to convert them. And that's, I'm not sure what argument she could mount that would pull away his support. She hasn't done it yet. Nobody else has done it yet. 4 years in the wilderness hasn't done it. So I'm not sure how she plans on doing this.
She did win independents unaffiliated votes. She did get college-educated adults. Do you think that that's a warning sign for the president?
It is, and I think it's always been there. I don't know that her getting them was a warning sign, that they may not have come out at all. But there's definitely a deficit in his party. In other words, he gets the rock solid support. He's getting this majority, so he's going to win the nomination. That seems almost guaranteed. The question is, can he expand this in light of Joe Biden's problems, in light of Kamala Harris?
Yeah.
All of the, Biden's befuddling nature, his clear and obvious decline, the bad policies. I mean, this Bidenomics argument, I don't know why he's making that. I think, someone was telling me yesterday, Brian, that we're all missing a point when we talk about inflation coming down, that, for example, farmers who are planting their next round of crops and will be planting throughout this year, they've already bought at these higher rates. They've bought seed, fuel, all of these things at much higher rates, which they're going to have to pass on when they harvest these crops and they go on the market. So that the inflation story, the point being the inflation story has not yet run the full cycle, despite what you're getting these monthly readings of things, it's coming down, but it hasn't exhausted yet. And I just think that all of these things are going to be factors,
right,
throughout this 10-month period. And, yes, the president, I was disappointed in his post-speech, in his speech after
the
caucus. Yeah, not smart. Small-minded. And he turned what should have been a victory celebration into a kind of gotcha moment with her. I mean, going after her dress, and I mean, it's really small-minded stuff, petty, personal, and that to me is a huge deficit for him with not only parts of his own party, but certainly with independent voters whom he's going to need to attract in the swing states.
Right. I want you to hear what Mark Penn said. Cut 11.
Look, when I look at these numbers, he has consolidated his opponents except one, Nikki Haley. He's on the way to winning this nomination, but she is holding the critical swing vote in the election. If he doesn't reconcile with her, it will be a fission that Democrats will be able to exploit in the election with their key issues on abortion, on climate change, and in those suburbs. So he's still got a big job ahead of him. It's not over yet.
So he is needs a strategy for that. He's got a good team around him. I hope they're looking at that.
You know, Brian, I was talking to somebody yesterday about the vice presidency, right? So, I mean, that's clearly one of the issues here. Would Nikki Haley be on the ticket with him? Would that address the issue that Mark Penn is talking about? But, if you look back, there are all kinds of different criteria for vice presidents. I mean, one of the older forms is the vice president is the bulldog, right? The presidential candidate is above it all, somewhat, a leader, a kind of figure who draws the country together, whereas the VP is the inside puncher, that kind of thing. Or you have, just somebody from a different region of the country, or like Mike Pence gave Donald Trump a certain legitimacy among evangelical voters in particular. So what is Trump looking for? And if Nikki Haley could provide a big final ingredient to him, then I think both of them would be, wise to now put a cork in this fight if there's any hope of a reconciliation.
Yeah, I mean, who would you pick?
Well, look, I think she is attractive on a number of fronts. But I mean, Republicans, except for Sarah Palin, have never had a female, right, on the ticket. Certainly, Tim Scott would be a path-breaking thing for Republicans. I think a Marjorie Taylor Greene or a Carrie Lake would be very much like Trump, you know, duplicating himself. I don't think it brings you anything new, gives you a new look. And so I think that there are a number of good options, and there are some bad ones.
Right. Yeah, we'll see what happens. I hear Trump world does not want Nikki Haley.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I think the personal bitterness between them might foreclose that, and that's too bad, because if he needs it, he would have to sort of flip on a dime at some point and make amends with her, and she with him. But, you know, look, remember when George H.W. Bush talked about Reagan's voodoo economics, right? That seemed like that was a breaking, and then Reagan turns around and selects him as his running mate, and it worked. So these things can be fixed if there's a desire and if there's a sense that it needs to be fixed.
All right, Mark, Michael Goodwin, thanks so much. Appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thank you, Brian.
All right, next, your calls, 1-866-408-7669. Call around the country. I want to get your vision of that, also on the border situation. We have states against states. Texas is doubling down, and they are just taking care of their own borders, citing constitutional authority. They're backed up by the Oklahoma governor, governor of Florida, by the governor of Georgia. The country is dividing again, not like it was in 1860, but it didn't stop the current president from referencing that, which to me is insane. It seems to be happening now like no time I can remember. You're listening to the Brian Kilmeade Show. Your thoughts next.
On the road to 2024.
This race is far from over.
She's doing like a speech like she won. She didn't win. She lost.
The latest polls. Instant analysis.
There are dozens of states left to go.
And we'll be there for everyone right here on the Brian Kilmeade Show. Radio that makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
In this town right now, you will have Democrats say Democrats really want to secure the border, while simultaneously Joe Biden is using the courts, suing Texas for enforcing its own border. This doesn't actually make sense. You can't believe in border security while simultaneously refusing to enforce your own border and then threatening Texas when it does its job for you.
That is J.D. Vance, and that's what's happening. I mean, I'm not kidding. When I got up this morning and started reading what's going on, citing the Constitution and states' rights on how you got to enforce your border, the 2 days after the Supreme Court ruled against them being able to enforce their own border, but Governor Abbott is using the Constitution to give Texas the soldier power. And they're saying this: the failure of the Biden administration to fulfill the duties imposed by Article 9, Section 4 has triggered Article 1, Section 10, Clause 3, which reserves the right of self-defense for these reasons. Quote, I have already declared an invasion under Article 1, Section 10, Clause 3, to invoke Texas constitutional authority to defend and protect itself. The authority to in the supreme law of the land and supersedes any federal statutes on the contrary. So that's legalese. He breaks it down earlier, tweets it out, and then gets support from Governor Ron DeSantis of Florida, Governor Glenn Youngkin of Virginia, Governor Kristi Noem of South Dakota, Governor Brian Kemp of Georgia, Gianforte of Montana. This is pretty impressive, but it's scary. I mean, the country's literally dividing on this. Roger, listening in Daytona Beach, Florida. Hey, Roger.
Yes, thank you for taking my call, Brian, the great American historian that you are. Your outstanding guests, Mark Thiessen in particular, spot on in his analysis. Trump can't win again if he does not bring the suburban women yep. from the swing states in. And if Nikki Haley joins No Labels on the top of the ticket, and it's Haley Manchin as No Labels.
Well, she's not going to do it, party. Evidently, on this copy there. Haley, if you're registered in a party primary, you cannot do the No Labels thing, but go ahead.
Well, in any case, that critical swing segment that Trump will lose will make it impossible for him to win again.
You know what? What's helping him? The illegal immigration thing. That's affecting families. And they're even going to let him peel off some people in the cities. So let's see if he needs a plan B for the moderates. Absolutely.
Why risk the moderate vote? We voted twice in Florida for him, but we're going to vote moderate if he doesn't pick the right vice president. And picking Haley, I know the base is against it. You know, when we lived in the Midwest, we were very much a part of the base. But our views have moderated since we came to Florida, and we are much,
I'm a fan of Nikki Haley. I just don't see synergy between him and the president anymore.
Breaking news, unique opinions. Hear it all on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
UAW family, today I'm proud to stand up here with your International Executive Board and announce that the UAW is endorsing Joe Biden for President of the United States.
There you go. Sean Fain endorses UAW president. And I tell you, I've never met him, but from his interviews, and the one time I interviewed him, he seems like a really terrible person. He is endorsing Joe Biden because he picked up went on the picket line for 15 minutes and took a side in a very tense, impactful negotiation with all the auto presidents. And because of the deal that they cut, a lot of people have been laid off. Sean Fain gives him that, not surprising, gives him that endorsement. With me in studio, a woman who needs no introduction, former Michigan gubernatorial candidate, very successful podcaster herself, Tudor Dixon. Tudor, welcome back.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
What's your reaction to Sean Fain, number one, taking his time and endorsing Joe Biden?
It's not just that. It's that he then came out and said, but the majority of our members will not vote for him. They will vote with their pocketbook because they want policies that will work for them. So think about what that means. He is endorsing the machine because the Democrats own the unions. It's not because he has control. The Democrats own him. He embarrassingly came out and said, I have no control over this situation. I'm forced to endorse Joe Biden and use my members' money to help him get elected, even though that's not what's best for my members, and I know it.
And Trump met with him, didn't he?
Yes. Yes. Trump met with him. Trump came out to Michigan at the same time, said he supports making sure that the jobs in the automotive industry are not forced to go away because of their climate plan. I mean, that's what Joe Biden is doing. Gretchen Whitmer, they are all forcing this electric car plan. And Ford just said they're reducing their manufacturing on electric vehicles because the consumers don't want it.
They don't want it. And but didn't he move the electric car plan out of the state?
Yeah. No,
because
yeah.
I interviewed the president of Ford, and he was in Tennessee, I think.
Right. Yes. They put billions into Kentucky and Tennessee because Michigan the energy costs are too high. And even the government grants that have come out for battery plants, not one of them went to Michigan. Even though Gretchen Whitmer is his favorite girl, he didn't choose to give her any money for battery plants.
So that whole state is going green. And what people don't understand, when you do that, or you're pro these international trade deals, that is anti-union, because unions for American workers. So people are getting a little confused, but the union members aren't confused. They know electric car takes less manpower. The batteries come from other places. The plant's going to be smaller. And for the most part, these are supplemented from the federal government. So it's not a fair fight.
And the interesting part about it, it takes more energy to create an electric vehicle. And so when energy costs are going up in a green state, then you can't build the plants, you can't build the factories in the state of Michigan because it's not cost effective because you have to use so much energy to make these cars. It's crazy to think about it. We are running our own legacy industry out of the state right now, and all manufacturers, because you can't manufacture with a windmill or a solar panel.
So, you know, you tried to be governor. You had momentum. You had the president behind you. The president did not win Michigan last time, but he's winning it this time. Do you believe these polls? I mean, you're on the ground. I mean, you don't need any rose-colored glasses. What's the reality?
we are early on. I believe the polls right now because the messaging hasn't come out from the Democrats. You see Gretchen Whitmer starting to roll up her stories about abortion. Abortion is big. She's talking. She's on MSNBC saying Biden has to talk more about abortion. Once they're
more? That's all he talks about.
Oh, she's, you know, she believes that's how she, I mean, it is how she won. Let's face it. It is a scare tactic. Your rights are being taken away. If you can come out and say someone's taking some right, then people will vote against that. You know, we don't want to have our rights taken away. It's a manipulation, and they haven't started their education campaign. They're waiting. They want Trump in there because they have all of the ammunition to run these ads and target people and say he's a bad guy and he's going to do this. They've already started the abortion ad that says, that, you know, I had to leave my state. It's a woman who says, I had to leave my state because of Donald Trump overturning Roe v. Wade. So they're coming for him. I think the polls are right now. It's going to be a battle like we have never seen. We're right neck and neck.
So the one thing he was not figuring is nobody knew about October 7th and the president backing Israel, which is the right thing to do, but going half-assed into it is typical him. And now that's militarized and radicalized some of the Muslim community in your state. How much of a problem is this for the Democratic Party?
I think it's a huge problem. You've got Rashida Tlaib there who is leading the charge. I mean, Joe Biden yesterday says that it was a MAGA heckler that came to his speech and said, ceasefire, ceasefire. This man has his own staff on his White House lawn out there with masks on because they don't want to be seen saying, we don't believe in what you're
think
doing in
that.
Israel.
The people that you picked to work for you have so little regard for you, they're protesting against you.
Yeah, at your house. Yes, yes, it is. And so that is a huge problem in Michigan because we have a very big Muslim population, a very big Jewish population. Those two factions are very much against each other. It puts Michigan in an interesting political situation, certainly for Republicans, whether it is on the presidential or the Senate race. And I don't think we're getting enough attention that we have an open Senate seat right now. And Michigan is not going well for Democrats.
Well, what about you? Are you going to run again?
We will see how things go in the state
in this
of
cycle?
Michigan. Yeah, I'm watching. I mean, and I'm playing. You know, we have a lot of work that we're doing on the behind the scenes in races in Michigan to change the way we run races. I told you, you know, I look at what we used for messaging in my race and how we ran ads. It was wrong. I learned a lot. I want to take what I learned and help people in the state.
What was
to
wrong
win.
About it?
We should have hit her more on COVID. We should have hit her on her record. We should have targeted people with ads. We shouldn't have spent our money on broadcast. People aren't connected to that anymore. They use connected TVs. They use their mobile phones. We had the opportunity to get the message directly to them about what she would do with their money. She had a state of the state last night, and it was like Oprah's favorite things. I'm giving you this. I'm giving you that. But the problem is at the end of the day, you walk out with the bill. You know, she says she's giving away free preschool, free college education. There's no free with the government. We're paying for that. She's building houses. She's taking $1.5 billion to build houses in the state of Michigan. This is socialism. Since when does the government build houses? She has no plan for growth in the state. And so those are the things we should have hit her on. Education is at an all-time low. We didn't hit her on this stuff. We made that mistake. I won't let people in Michigan make that mistake again.
And she's not, is she term limited?
Yes, this is the end.
Okay.
Well,
so,
I believe she'll go to Washington.
And as you know, there's a book out now that says that she was Joe Biden's pick and that Barack Obama said you have to pick Kamala Harris. And he ends up giving in to Barack Obama. What do you think the reality is? What do you know about that?
We had heard on the ground that her staff was already in D.C., with realtors picking out places to live, that she had been told by Joe Biden that she was the pick. And then he came back to her and said, sorry, we have to go with the diverse pick. You are not the choice. And I think that since then, he's felt indebted to her. She's the co-chair of his campaign. I believe that Michigan is just a in the background for her now. She's planning on a cabinet position or something if she's not running for president, if he lives.
If he survives.
Yeah.
I mean, you can imagine what a swap that would be. The first minority woman vice president gets swapped out for a Michigan governor. I don't see that happening.
No, they can't do that. They can't do that. But she's going to be given something big. I don't think she's in Michigan for the next 2 years. They put Gilchrist in, her lieutenant governor, and then she moves on.
So this line five, tell me the impact of it. It goes underneath the Great Lakes. It goes right into Michigan. And suddenly she might cut it off from Canada?
Yeah. So Enbridge, the company that owns it, said, we will encase it. We'll make sure we have a cement tunnel under the water. We'll encase it. It will be as safe as possible. It is the safest way to transport this as it is. If we shut down.
Transport energy.
Energy, yes. If we shut this down, we're moving 2,500 trucks of oil a day through Michigan. Impossible. You can't do that. But that's what their plan is. She and the liberals in Wisconsin are working. They have right now. They have the okay to shut it down. If they shut it down, 60% of the people who heat their homes in the UP, they don't have any hope except for a truck traveling across the Mackinac Bridge every day. Give me a break. How dangerous is that? Other than that, we could put it on a barge in Lake Michigan. That's also incredibly environmentally unsafe. There is no solution. These are radical political policies to pander to people who are environmentalists that have no plan or of safety.
So you mentioned before about Sean Fain not voting for Trump. Here's what he said to Neil Cavuto.
Let me be clear about this. A great majority of our members will not vote for President Biden. Yes, some will. But that's the reality of this. The majority of our members are going to vote their paychecks. They're going to vote for an economy that works for them, and they're going to vote for a president. When you look at these two presidents, the choice is very clear about which one stands up with the working class and stands up for labor, and which one stands for the billionaire class, and that's his base.
Wow. So Trump made the effort. It's hard to say he's not a blue-collar president, and he's making him earn it, but he's saying that I could, whatever I say, they're going to do whatever they want.
But I took that as he's saying, I mean, Biden's the one that stands with the billionaires. No one has come to Trump's aid and said, I'm going to fund him. In fact, billionaires have said we're stepping away from Trump. So I heard him literally say the guy who is going to work for my members is Donald Trump. But somehow I was forced to endorse Joe Biden. What do they have over these union bosses, whether it is the teachers union or the UAW? These guys, for some reason, take paycheck money from their members and hand it over to somebody who creates policy that closes their plants down and they lose jobs because of it. It's pretty sick.
It's pretty insane. But my hope is when you actually see that the windmills aren't working, like off the coast of New Jersey, when you see that the electric cars aren't effective, like they're not working when the Midwest gets freezing. People are not going to deal with this. Like when the UP, Upper Peninsula, doesn't have oil and gas, what are you doing? If people effectively say, if you shut down Line 5, what it does to the Midwest and how this is a political play that's not going to pay off. See, it's not like it's not a choice of technology. The green technology is not there.
By the time you see it, we're broke. And the problem with that is that the reason that third world countries continue in the situation they are in is because they don't have access to energy. Energy is the lifeblood of the world. That is how you are financially prosperous. We will not have that in Michigan, but by the time we see it, it'll be too late. The hope that we have is that Governor Whitmer just signed a bill that will take away local control. So you talk about windmills off the coast of New Jersey. Now we're talking about putting windmills all along the coast of Lake Michigan. The people in those communities, that's our tourism. That's how we make money. There's no way they're going to be okay with all of a sudden these windmills going up. Once they see that, they'll say, these Democrats don't have our best intentions in mind. We're suddenly have oil dripping out of these into our lakes. Give me a break. This is an environmental disaster. They don't care about the environment. They'll do that. They bring in the Chinese battery plant into the state of Michigan, right on our major water source. And no environmental testing for that plant. Every other American company has environmental testing, but not that
one. When was that?
This just happened in the last year, and we exposed this story. Fox helped us bring the story out.
I thought we stopped it.
The battery plant will still be built. They overturned their entire town council in the last election, and they're still working to shut it down. But Whitmer has stood by it, so she still has them coming. It's still coming.
So, I mean, that's one thing that someone like you or any Republican should be right in front of that plant, President Trump. The next day, Mike Rogers, who wants to be the next senator, should be right there and say, is this okay with you?
100%. Yeah, absolutely. This is what I'm saying about Republican messaging. We've got to be hitting hard on the things that are hurting Americans every day, whether it is hurting our water, our farmland, our pocketbook, our national security. Those are the things that we know how to fix, and we're not talking about it. I mean, for all the issues on parents' rights, you know I'm a huge advocate for that. But that's not winning elections, because people want to make sure that things that affect them every single day in their pocketbook, whether it's their children's safety for policing or drinking water. We're talking about those things. That's where we need to be.
All right. Tudor, I've used a couple more things. I want you to hear this. You mentioned that Governor Whitmer had an address last night, State of the State. This was part of her introduction on free junior college. The potato.
Hey, Governor Whitmer, how's it going?
Hi, Professor Potato.
This year, we will work together to make the first 2 years of community college tuition-free for every high school graduate.
That's right, Professor. Michiganders will save an average of $4,000 as they earn their associate's degree.
Hey, that isn't small potatoes. That's a big deal.
Later, Tater.
So what was the point of that?
This is because the new generation, everybody, I mean, I talked to a professor a couple weeks ago, and he said, when I ask kids now what they want to be when they grow up, they say famous. She's playing into that. She's trying to be famous. She's trying to be a famous politician. But let's not forget, this communications team that she's built that is so big and creating these videos that take a lot of effort. I mean, you have to digitally create a potato.
Yeah, right.
We're paying for that.
Right.
That's coming right out of the budget. Our taxpayer dollars went to create this embarrassing, and it's embarrassing. I mean, it's one thing if you do something funny. This is humiliating.
I agree. Tudor, stick around. A couple more minutes when we come back. And then what are you going to be on tonight?
I will be on tonight, Kudlow? Kudlow, yes.
Larry Kudlow.
Yes.
You have to use both names.
Larry Kudlow.
Back in a moment.
Newsmakers and newsbreakers. Hear it first on the Brian Kilmeade Show. The fastest 3 hours in radio. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
In 2019, our members were out there holding the line at GM on a national strike for 40 days. Trump was the sitting president. He said nothing. He did nothing. Not a damn thing, because he doesn't care about the American worker.
That is Sean Fain. He's got a few different personalities. Did you notice? Tudor Dixon is here, ran for governor, is in New York City. He's got a very successful podcast. Tudor, so what do we believe? Do we believe the guy that was talking to Neil Cavuto? Or do we know the guy who's suing the president with a picket walking the picket line?
No, we support we know that the guy who's talking about what his members will do is the truth. That's the truth. He's admitting that his members need somebody who's going to support them. I'm telling you, the Democrat machine is so strong when it comes to, hey, it's time to pay up. We're going to send our henchmen to break your knees, or you give us the money. They want the union money. For some reason, these unions give them billions of dollars to run for office, and they're not going to let that go. The Democrats are not going to be like, okay, you chose President Trump. For some reason, they must have something that they've got holding over his head, but he's out there admitting his members will vote for Trump.
How do you feel about Nikki Haley hanging in there?
Look, I think it's really hard to ever tell anybody it's your time to leave. If you've run for office, you know that that's the hardest decision you can make, to walk out of a race. Because it's not just people say, oh, this is arrogant, this is her. You have so many people that you've promised, I'm going to do this for you. You've had so many people say, I need you. You've taken money from people. It is a personal decision. You have to sit by yourself. Your family members can't make it. Your advisors can't make it. You have to go, okay, I have to go out there and look at the people that said, we've got your back, and say, I'm stepping away from you.
Right. Do you get to keep the money, right?
You don't get to keep the money personally. I mean, right. You have to figure out how that works in a political sense.
But yeah, I mean, you don't cash in on it. But if you want to run again,
right,
it's important. If you're in a fruitless campaign and you have ambition after, don't overspend and then wish you had that money.
Well, that's the see, this is what I think will happen. I don't know, but this is my theory. In the next few weeks, she has to put a lot of money into South Carolina. You don't want to go to your home state and be blown out. If in a few weeks it shows it's not going to be a good thing, she has to bow out before she embarrasses herself.
All right,
there.
Good luck on Larry Kudlow. You're going to be on Jimmy Fallon over the weekend,
yes,
right?
Yes.
So that'll be great. Tudor Dixon, thanks so much.
Thank you.
All right, keep it here. It's the Brian Kilmeade Show. Go move.
Fox News headquarters in New York City. Always seeking solutions, never sowing division. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Brian Kilmeade here. Thanks so much for listening. We have a lot to discuss this hour, a lot of things, moving parts. Going to be great to talk to Jamie Metzl shortly. You know, Jamie's great friend of the show, member of the WHO Advisory Committee, senior fellow at the Atlantic Council, former National Security Council official with the Clinton administration, and Riley Gaines, author of Happy No Snakes Day. She's going to be with us, too. Riley Gaines, the outstanding college swimmer who took on that whole trans athlete situation, because believe it or not, some women want to compete against other women at the high level. Let's get to the big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
It's called Bidenomics. If you notice, all the major economists were talking about there's going to be a recession next week, next month. But all of a sudden, they're seeing the Lord.
Really? Let's see about that. But once again, the president, tone deaf, in my view, maybe not yours, is out there talking about Bidenomics. He spent $40 million this summer selling Bidenomics, and it lost percentages of approval rating. But now he's got GDP numbers that are favorable. Let's see if that changes.
Number two.
I think at this point right now, the Senate and Congress have to deliver on a comprehensive border security situation. We should, absolutely. And I don't understand why it would be controversial.
That is John Fetterman. The border battle heating up on every level. Texas ramping up its states' rights on the border security. Biden's court fights are continuing, and so is the Trump court fights. He is back in court today. So that is what they're looking for, a broader bill. And all sides have problems with it, even though it's not even released yet. But the main one Republicans have, a trust that the president really wants to enforce the border because of the way he's pushing back on Texas, who are enforcing the border.
Number one.
We've only had two states that have voted. We got 48 more that deserve to vote. So we are not going to sit there and just give up.
We'll see. That is the former governor of South Carolina in South Carolina, still fighting but not winning. Nikki Haley continues to battle for the nomination. That is her right. I think Trump should embrace that, but focus on the national matchup, because that's what Joe Biden is working on. That'll actually help the president think bigly, if I could choose his word. With me right now is Jamie Metzl. Jamie, welcome back.
Thanks, Brian. Happy to be here.
Hey, Jamie, no one's talking about it now, but do you think China's watching the lack of support that Ukraine is suddenly getting? You think they're watching how Iran is ratcheting up things on us through their surrogates?
Absolutely, Brian. I know you've been a big advocate of support for the people of Ukraine who are fighting for their freedom and independence. Yep. It's all one struggle. Everybody is watching everyone. Iran is watching Ukraine and Taiwan. China is watching Ukraine and Iran. And Russia is watching Taiwan and what's happening in Israel. And we need to stand strong on each one of these fronts, because if we just pick and choose and we say, all right, we're supporting Israel, but Ukraine is on its own, we're going to have a problems that are going to be global. So you've had it exactly right from the beginning. What's happening is there is an assault on freedom, on democracy by China, Russia, and Iran. And the United States and our allies need to call this with the evil for what it is and stand up to it.
And we all should note the alliance. North Korea is providing the artillery. The Russians seem to be providing the intelligence. China weapons have turned up in Gaza in the hands of Hamas. That is certainly for real. And we also know that the Houthi rebels are almost solely backed by China. Excuse me, by Iran.
By Iran.
And guess what? They were trying to get the attention. The Saudis were trying to get our attention on this. But this administration totally reversed the policy and told the Saudis you better stand down and told the Houthis you're no longer on the terror list. So that has been a epic disaster.
Yeah. So, I mean, the Houthis, I mean, yes, we can say that we have a conflict with the Houthis. But the Houthis are a creation of Iran. They're controlled by Iran. They're armed by Iran. So we just need to be honest about who we have this conflict with. And if we're just bombing a bunch of stuff in the desert in Yemen, we probably need to do that because of these attacks. But we need to make pretty clear to Iran that attacks by the Houthis will be perceived as attacks by Iran. And we need to be smart and strategic. But we need to make clear to Iran that enough is enough.
Sweden looks like they're going to get admission into NATO, and they've made the statement, as is Norway and Finland, that they really expect the Russians to make a move on those fronts in the next couple of years. They think they have a couple of years. The ramifications of attacking a NATO nation hit home. Don't you think the administration should be making that known, that the Russian plans to move forward are not only thought to be concrete, but thought to by the people who are on the border of Russia, and that if a ally is hit, we are treaty obligated to respond, and that you could walk away from Ukraine, but you just be postponing a major war that we have to be involved in?
Absolutely, Brian. Right now, there are major NATO military exercises in the region in order to deliver that that message. And I guarantee you know, as you said in the intro, the Russians are watching our politics. And every day that Congress doesn't support the arms for Ukraine that are so badly needed, when they see American politicians like Donald Trump and some of his surrogates supporting Viktor Orban and saying, hey, this isn't our struggle, it's really dangerous. We need to make clear across the board, Democrats, Republicans, independents, everybody, that America stands for something. It stands for freedom. It stands for democracy. And we are going to do everything possible to support the brave people in Ukraine who aren't just fighting for themselves. They're fighting for us. They're fighting. It's like the wall from Game of Thrones. They are fighting to protect us. And if we don't win that struggle, exactly as you said, we're going to be having to fight struggles that are much closer to home, right, with actual American soldiers fighting in Europe. And if we don't want that in the future, we need to hold strong now.
Well, I also think that people are watching and seeing us strung out, knowing that China and Russia to some degree are pulling the strings and trying to distract us. Shouldn't we have a grand plan on how to not let go of the Pacific, knowing we've got limited assets, by the same time responding to threats in the Middle East?
Yeah, completely. And that's why the United States, as strong as we are, and we have the strongest military in the history of humans on planet Earth, we can't do it alone. And that's why allies and partners are so important. And all of our allies are watching us to say, hey, will we stand by our allies? Will we stand by our treaty commitments in Europe to NATO? Because together, America and our allies and partners are much more powerful than Russia, China, and Iran. But we need to stay together. And that's why I definitely think that the messages of strength are really important. But it also, those need to be tied to messages of unity and collaboration with our allies. And Europe is starting to get it. Donald Trump was right. I mean, as always, he didn't say it artfully. But in this case, he was right, saying, hey, Europe isn't carrying its load for the common defense. Europe needs to spend much more on developing its military capabilities, do more. And Germany has this hangover because they were living in this fantasy world, basically under the U.S. security umbrella, feeling like they didn't have any enemies and they could just, you know, not arm themselves and be beneficiaries of trade with Russia and China without any responsibility. So I think that we really need to make sure that the message is we need to stand tall, and everybody in this camp of freedom and democracy has an important role to play.
Yeah, I guess we'll see what's going to happen. One thing is pretty clear. Getting everyone to pay 2% is important. And what people at home should be listening to is Mark Thiessen outlined brilliantly. He said, look, if Latvia, if Estonia, if Poland, if all these other countries see the threat, guess what they're going to need? Patriot missiles. Yep. They're not asking for gifts. They will write the check, especially healthy economies like Norway and Sweden. So you could say we get rid of our old stuff. We bring in the new stuff. We have customers pay for their stuff. And this is a win for everybody.
Yep. No, it's such an essential message, Brian. Again, you've been steadfast on it, but it's really worrying to hear the voices in our democracy, in our government, in our elected officials saying, "Hey, enough is enough with Ukraine. You know, we shouldn't be fully supporting, arming helping arm Israel. We shouldn't be supporting and helping arm Taiwan. This is all one struggle. If we lose anywhere, we're likely to lose everywhere. And we have the means to hold strong, as we have done for many decades since the end of World War II. But to do it, and it's why I'm always so happy to speak with you, Brian, we need to invest in our commonalities. Democrats like me and Republicans like you, we may not agree on everything, but there's a whole lot that we can agree on as patriotic Americans, wanting our country to be as effective and powerful and prosperous,
right,
and values-driven as possible. And so we need to invest in those things, because if we become this tribal nation of all these different tribes with no common ground, and anybody who reaches across the aisle to try to build a coalition gets hit on the head, regardless of the underlying issues, that's going to be very dangerous for us and for the world.
So let's talk about China for a second. And people are starting to talk about what WHO's doing, trying to make try and maneuver to the fact is next time there's a pandemic, they will make the rules on what we here in the U.S. will be able to do or not do.
You know, it's a double-edged sword on this sovereignty issue. On one hand, the reason why the WHO couldn't be very effective in the earliest days of the pandemic is they have almost no authority. And so when China was lying, they weren't able to have their own investigative authority. When China blocked the WHO investigators from going to Wuhan, even though there were some really questionable things about it, there was nothing that the WHO could do. So we've all suffered because the WHO isn't empowered. But if we build a WHO with the authorities to do things like do its own investigations when something suspicious is happening in China, that will infringe on national sovereignty everywhere, including our own. And I don't have a perfect answer for that, but it's in all of our interest,
right,
to have a WHO that can get answers and do some basic things that need to be done on a global,
right,
level.
But you know what, Jamie, they lost me the way they when they spent the first 6 months of the pandemic praising China and didn't demand inspection. I don't want those people control of anything I'm doing. And this guy is not even a doctor who's running the place. But Jamie,
he's a doctor, Dr. Tedros.
Dr. Tedros, what does he do? What
kind of doctor? No, he's a doctor. He's a friend of mine, and he's a great guy. But what I will say is that the WHO, it's they're kind of in a no-win situation, because for them to have the authorities to do the job, they need to have those authorities. But if they do have them, there are lots of people who don't trust what they're doing. So there's no easy answers to it. Our country has been struggling with this issue since the League of Nations, which we rejected after World War I. And then with World War II, there was kind of a fudge between national sovereignty and international obligations. So these answers aren't easy, but I think that we have to wrestle with them to try to get to the right answer.
Right. So, Jamie, the last minutes we have remaining, we have opportunity. The Russians lost 300,000 fighters in Ukraine, and there's some unrest within their country that could be exploited, number one. Number two is China's economy is not reviving. And it's probably worse. Whatever we get, it's probably worse than they know. People have lost their ambition. A whole generation is not pursuing jobs like they used to. There are not opportunities like there were. Construction is falling through the floor. Real estate doesn't really exist at this moment. They overbuilt for the population that's decreasing. There are five alarm fires inside China. How do we best take advantage of that?
So you're absolutely right. People have thought for a long time that, oh, China is just going to get better and stronger, and we're going to get weaker and weaker, and it's inevitable that China is taking over the world. It's not at all. They have terrible weaknesses and terrible flaws, and it all starts with their politics. I mean, when you go to China in Tiananmen Square, you see the portrait of Mao Zedong hanging. He's responsible for the deaths of 47 million Chinese people. So the entire Chinese Communist Party is based on a foundation of lies and murder and repression. And so definitely we need to hold strong and not let China do these things that they're getting away with. And whether it's on trade or aggression in the South China Sea or Taiwan or all sorts of other things. And the other thing that we need to do is we need to invest in making America as strong as it can be. And that means with a flourishing, strong democracy, a flourishing, strong economy. And politics are a healthy part of our democracy. But we need to prevent our politics from becoming a dumpster fire of tribalist destruction. And so there have been times when we've come together as in the Second World War and other times, we say, hey, we have a big job to do. We recognize we have differences and we need to respect those differences and negotiate them. But we need to find a way. I mean, government is about compromise, and we can't all be extremists on one side or the other. We need to find the best way forward together. We are blessed in this country with incredible geography, incredible people, the most talented people in the world. If you're not already here, most of them want to come here.
Right.
We've got everything, but we need to make sure that our processes are making us stronger and not weaker.
He is Jamie Metzl. Jamie, thanks so much. Appreciate it.
My pleasure, Brian. Anytime.
Great segment. When we come back, your turn. And then bottom of the hour, Riley Gaines. Brand new book out, and she's got a great message. Don't move. Brian Kilmeade Show.
It's Brian Kilmeade. The talk show that's getting you talking. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
We haven't seen a whole lot of Melania lately. She's not been on the campaign trail, but Brian Kilmeade of Fox & Friends believes she's about to step up and play a bigger role.
She always did play a big role. She was somebody that you could rely on.
I assume they haven't spoken in years. And then Kilmeade took the opportunity to kiss Trump's sizable but slightly less sizable now ass.
You look like you're in fighting shape. How much weight did you lose?
Yeah, so that's Jimmy Kimmel. They have one track, and it's all anti-Trump. We're probably not going to play him on our show again. Riley Gaines is coming up shortly, and she's got a brand new book out, Happy No Snakes Day, which is fantastic, along with her message, too. And by the way, we will keep you up to date on what's happening. The one thing I could tell you as I was coming up here, the one thing Donald Trump will have to deal with, the numbers are looking better when it comes to the economy. It's growing at 3.1%. That is pretty impressive. The problem with the president's speech today and the foreign president is that no one really feels it. And the studies within those numbers don't reflect the numbers that we're all seeing. That's made Donald Trump come out and say, I don't believe any of those numbers, which is problematic in its own right. Keep it here.
He's so busy, he'll make your head spin. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hey, with me in studio is a very familiar face. If you're smart enough to be watching on Fox Nation or on the Fox News app, you just click on watch and just swipe until you get to radio, is Riley Gaines, author of Happy No Snakes Day. It's a children's book that she has out now, which is a great theme. And you know Riley Gaines, she's also on OutKick, where she has a show, Gains for Girls. Riley, welcome. Great to see you in studio.
Yes, thank you so much for having me.
Are you excited to have the launch of your first book?
I am so excited. I think this is, and you know this, we've really reached a precipice. We need alternative companies and alternative organizations who are pushing against, I would call them, cultural fads that we're seeing. So you think of things like Brave Books, which is who this book is with. You think of things like Patriot Mobile or Nimi Skincare. I mean, these groups that are pushing back. And that's exactly what this is. This is a book that teaches children about the importance of standing up for the truth,
right,
despite being afraid. So, yeah, it was super fun to write. The illustrations are just awesome. And I'm very excited.
What ages are you targeting with the book?
Elementary school kids. What we're seeing be targeted towards elementary school kids, you know, in these different libraries and things. You've got, I mean, the cover of these books, it's kids looking down their pants and all this crazy stuff. But this is
not your book.
Not my book. This is what elementary school kids need to be reading, and younger parents can read these to kids who can't yet read.
Right. And it isn't just about knowing your gender.
No.
This is just about speaking up.
Absolutely. It's just about the virtue of speaking the truth.
Right.
Brave Books, they are very pro-God. They're pro-America, which is something that seems to be lacking in corporate America nowadays. So, yeah, that's what this book is about.
All right. So Riley, for you, what has the last couple of years been like for you? How is it so dramatically different from when you were swimming, looking to finish out? And you told me, I think, that you were going to be a dentist or a dental hygienist.
Yeah. What I wanted to specialize in actually was endodontics, which is like root canals. I'd already put my deposit down, accepted my seat into dental school, taken the DAT, and scored in the top percentile nationally. Could have gone anywhere I wanted for dental school. But now here we are. And man, this is never a position that you could imagine yourself in or that you could really even be prepared for. And truthfully, almost kind of ashamedly, I didn't have any sort of background in understanding our government or civil process or civics in general. I knew we had three branches. That's quite literally it. And so I've been so eye-open this past year and a half, really, and understanding how our government works, the political sphere, the media. I mean, gosh, I've just been eye-opened. And once you are eye-opened, it's really hard to turn away.
And you didn't.
No.
You dug in.
Absolutely. That's really what I've dedicated myself to now, is fighting back, pushing against, again, the media, corporate America, academia even. It's been super fun, I'll say, to watch kind of the dismantling of even these institutions that once would be called prestigious, Harvard, UPenn, MIT. There's many more to expose. It's infiltrated into every realm. The left has seemingly overtaken the public square. And so we need people who are, I won't say unafraid because there are fears, but we need people who are courageous, who, despite being afraid, stand up for what is true and what is right and what is fair and what is just.
Yeah, between what's happened in sports, and we'll get into that, but also what's happened since the October 7th attacks.
Right.
It's exposing him. You're smart enough and athletic enough to play Division I, to swim Division I, and to get into the University of Pennsylvania and excel. So all those things are extremely rare. But were you aware of the left-wing bias that was taking place?
I knew media bias in general existed, but oh my gosh, I did not understand to the extent. Speaking of what's going on, what has gone on since October 7th, if you watch the two main media outlets, Fox versus CNN, one will say the war in Israel and one will say the war on Israel. And it's such a small, subtle difference, but those things matter. And so now that I've noticed it, yeah, it's just impossible not to notice. And I feel compelled, really. I feel responsible in sharing this kind of knowledge to people my age, especially.
Right.
Being 23, you know, college age, Gen Z people, they're not keeping up, which they need to be, because ultimately we're going to be left with this country. It's we are the future.
And the thing that I think is so just alarming is, okay, not so much me and you disagree, but I want to destroy you for disagreeing with me. Excuse me? What are you trying to do? I'm literally canceled. You know, the governor of North Carolina was just on. Now he's with No Labels. And he said, you know, I literally was one of the first canceled because he believed that men and women should use separate bathrooms.
Yeah.
How crazy is that?
No, I know. We've reached that point. They'll really stop it. There's no links they won't go to, in my own personal experience. I've been spit on. I've had drinks poured on me. I've had glass bottles thrown at me. I've been punched by men who are wearing dresses, which fortunately for me, their punches don't actually hurt that bad. I've been held for ransom for over 4 hours, where these protesters demanded that if I wanted to make it home to see my family safely again, I had to pay them money. And all for saying men and women are different. I've had people show up at my house. I mean, I've had people stake outside my hotel rooms saying the most obscene, awful, profane things you could possibly imagine. It's wild.
And your thought was, instead of backing up, I'm doubling down.
Yeah, it's really kind of reassuring, truthfully. And it took me a while to get to that point where I could understand this. But when they're so desperate to keep you quiet, it means you're right over the target, and they don't waste ammunition on targets that they don't want to hit.
Riley Gaines is with me now. Her children's book is out with a great message, Happy No Snakes Day. And it's really for kids to show some courage in school, to stand up for what they think, what they believe in, and not be bullied. But this whole transgender thing, people try to say, well, there's a lack of tolerance for people. You don't know, understand what people are going through when they want to have their gender identity. And once they go through it, why can't they play sports like you? What is your answer to that?
Well, first of all, women should not be just reduced down to merely a testosterone level. That's what we're seeing a lot of these governing bodies like USA Boxing.
What the hell is that?
I'm still trying to figure that one out. I mean, that's the most crazy thing. In the name of progress, weirdly enough, we are glorifying men for punching women in the face, giving them prize money and titles and championship belts. I mean, that's just, it would be objectively funny if there weren't real consequences, right? Because it's like a Saturday Night Live
skit. These are trained fighters.
Right.
So you,
right.
You learn to be a trained fighter as a man, you become a woman, vice versa. Regardless, you spend 8 hours a day learning to hit other people.
Yep. So, but anyways, despite that, men and women are inherently and innately different. More than just the testosterone level. You have things like lung size or heart size or, of course, height, limb length. I mean, the list goes on of these differences. Even in swimming, my sport, it might not seem like a big deal, but men have, on average, a 40% larger throat than women. And that matters when you're grasping for air. And that's not going to change with testosterone suppression. So these differences, they are there. They are real. God, when he created man and woman, that should be really the only distinction that we need.
So today I just picked up this story. At Rikers Island, a former prisoner in a women's jail is suing New York City for allegedly and their jail staff for ignoring her warnings back last year that a transgender woman housed among females was actually a man pretending to be a woman. According to the suit, the victim was not only believed that the alleged perpetrator was lying about their gender identity, but the prison was purposely instructed to claim that he was transgender by the DOC staff so they could stay in the female dorm where he would have access to female inmates. And you said to me what when I told you this story?
Well, first of all, this is not unique to just New York. In New York prisons alone, they have posted placards, and they're all women's prisons, about pregnancy prevention. And they're all women's prisons. It's happening in New Jersey, Ohio, Kansas, and California. Of course, in California. In recent weeks, there was over, I believe, 1,600 men in the state of California apply to be in women's prisons. And yeah, these are men who are convicted of heinous things such as kidnapping, child pornography, rape, and they're getting into these women's prisons. And they are raping these inmates, these female inmates. But truthfully, can we even be surprised by this, when these are the systems that we have in place? How can they, how do they not think people are going to take advantage?
They're already prisoners. They'll do anything to cheat the system.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't they say, let my incarceration be something more enjoyable?
Absolutely.
Right.
And that's what's going to continue happening. You know how many women who have now suddenly identified as men to get into men's prisons? Zero.
Absolutely zero.
Zero.
Yeah. No kidding. So that's what we're seeing now. Are you still swimming?
Here and there. Not necessarily competitively, but I'm doing some running and marathons and triathlons, and I still love competing. I love to win.
Right.
So, yeah, here and there.
So you got out of the water, but you're still competing.
Absolutely.
Triathlon should be right up your alley. The hardest thing is to swim.
Well, I beg to differ. That bike, it gets me.
Does the bike get you?
The bike gets me. I know.
I thought the bike would be the easiest for you.
I know.
What is it, 2.5 miles for an average triathlon?
Well, it depends. You have different distances. And so a sprint triathlon is 400 meters swimming. I think it's 12 miles biking and then a 5K. But I prefer the Olympic distance, which is 800, half a mile swim. I think 25-ish miles on a bike and then a 6-mile run.
Are you even winded after a half mile swim?
No, that takes me like less than 10 minutes.
Oh,
maybe.
My goodness. Yeah, and did you ever get burnt out from swimming?
Which is very common. I swam from the time I was 4 till 22, so that's 18 years of your life you dedicate to your sport, which it's 2 times a day, every day. In college, we swam 6 hours every day, 15,000 yards plus, which is 10 miles every day.
And it's solemn, isn't it?
Yeah, that's one word to describe it.
Well, you got to be self-motivated, and that's going to work in your life. It got that toughness. Do you have a few more minutes?
Absolutely.
All right, so listen, Riley Gaines is here. Her book is now out today. It is publishing day. So happy No Snakes Day is it. If you're thinking about getting a book for your kids with a great message, that's where to get it. At Riley G. Barker is where to find you, right?
Yeah. And so, you can look up www.bravebooks.com. If you subscribe to their Freedom Island Book Club, you can get my book for free.
All right. There you go. Thanks, Riley.
Thank you.
Just keep it here.
Educating, entertaining, enlightening. You're with Brian Kilmeade. Information you want. Truth you demand. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Hey, Riley Gaines is here. You got to go pick up her book. It's really dealt for kids. For parents listening right now, you're driving, just remember this name, Happy No Snakes Day. You could go to Brave Books.
Yep.
Or do you have it on your website, too, I imagine?
Yeah, yeah. On my Twitter, which is Riley underscore Gaines underscore, there's a link there. You can buy the book on its own, or you can subscribe to the subscription service and get my book for free.
All right. So you've been in a tornado, really, for about the last 18 months.
Absolutely.
We were just going over who, as you go to fight for women in sports, which I thought we would, you know, I thought it was a done deal with Title IX. That used to be controversial, Title IX. Men's sports, in order to get the numbers equal to women, were cutting different sports.
Right.
That was once the controversy. Now, where all those women that work so hard to get here, you're almost divided. You mentioned that Billie Jean King is fighting for the trans men.
Yep.
And you have Martina Navratilova, who is firmly in your corner.
She's a lesbian, yeah. She's a part of this community. So they call it the LGBTQ community. And really, it's kind of crazy because we don't agree on much else
right.
outside of this, talking about political issues. But she's totally on board because she was an athlete. She knows that she wouldn't have had the opportunities and success that she had she had to compete against men. But yeah, you think of someone like Billie Jean King, who is really who we have to accredit Title IX to.
Yeah.
You think about it. She played in the Battle of the Sexes. It was this huge thing. She won. And now Billie Jean King, along with the National Organization of Women, which is just mind-blowing, they're leading the charge in totally undermining everything that they once fought for. And they're actively fighting for male inclusion in women's sports.
People, I mean, women must be really confused because they used to know exactly who to follow and who's setting the pace. And now they aren't. But do you find that you're winning people over because your argument's so solid?
Definitely. Not only is the argument solid, it is the most basic of arguments. We're at this point now where it's kind of like this whole emperor wears no clothes thing. So many of us are thinking it. So many athletes and coaches and parents and medical professionals, the list goes on. So many of us are thinking it, but people are terrified to say it. So yes, we're definitely winning people over. I don't think it's, you know, you look at the media and you look at how our government officials, elected officials are voting, and you would think this is a very partisan issue that falls on party lines, but it's not. Every poll shows. There was a recent Gallup poll that showed over 70% of Americans agree that men should not be in women's sports or women's bathrooms.
So Leah Thomas in particular, she's the one we always see famously. You're behind her when no one really knew who you were. Like, what the hell?
Yeah.
She had won a meet, I guess.
Yeah.
Do you know the picture I'm talking about?
I do.
What is that? What was that meet?
It was our national championships of 2022, which is, of course, I mean, it's the meet you work not just all year for, but all your life for. It's comparatively, it's faster and more competitive than the Olympics because of the depth that the U.S. has. So the fastest meet in the world. Thomas won a national title, swimming 3 years on the men's team previously at UPenn, ranking in the 400s and 500s, mediocre at best, to then dominating the entire country of women.
Right. And your husband, then I guess fiance or boyfriend, swam on the same team, right? He's on the men's team.
Yeah, yeah. So my husband competed against Will Thomas. And so to now kind of have this come full circle, and I've also had to compete against Will, Leah Thomas. Just as we said before the break here, like, it's like a South Park episode or like a Babylon Bee headline, but it's real life now.
Right. It is. And now what kind of life that Leah Thomas has graduated.
Right.
And is, I guess, in law school.
Right. And that's this is the thing that kills me, because we hear people all the time. I hear it all the time when I travel state to state. We hear people say, look, they just want to be happy. They just want to live their life. First of all, Thomas was invited fully to undress in our locker rooms, exposing his male parts, all of the things. But Thomas now, and this is all through social media, it's all public through social media, openly a Satanist, openly a communist, openly a part of Antifa, which, I mean, how I feel and how a majority of us felt is we were being forced to by the NCAA to basically participate in this person's fetish, because now he's dating another trans identifying person who is a male who identifies as a woman. So two men actually
pretending to be women.
Pretending to be women. So two men who call themselves lesbians. And look, I don't want to police what people do behind closed doors. Of course not. But don't infringe upon me.
Right.
Don't come in my locker room exposing your male parts. Right.
It affects you. You're swimming two times a day since the time you were four. You want a shot at a national championship, thank you, going against other women. Steroids used to be a big controversy. And lastly, this guy finally had his surgery, and he keeps his testicles in a jar.
that's yeah. Again, through social media, it's on there. They have their testicles pickled in a jar on their mantle at their house.
Hard to imagine, and I'd rather not. But, but I mean, that's what you're dealing with, and that's what you worked your way through, and that's why your Outkick show is so valuable. Gains for Girls. Because I have both my daughters are college athletes too, and I worry, especially soccer, if a man pretending to be a woman goes out there, you're talking about head balls, crushing,
right,
physical game, let alone boxing, which is insanity. I don't know if she would play if actually she saw that.
Yeah, no.
Pick up Happy No Snakes Day. Thanks so much for stopping by on day one. Hopefully you'll be a regular guest.
Of course. Thank you, Brian.
And pick up and don't forget to watch her on Outkick. Keep it here, Brian Kilmeade Show.
Listen to the show ad-free on Fox News Podcast Plus, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music with your Prime membership, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.